more at centrify.com.
Well, good morning. Welcome to the Sustainable Living Program with John Butts. John is here every other Monday at 10 o'clock on WMNF in Tampa. Hi, John. How are you?
Pretty good, Rob. How are you? Did you have a nice Earth Day yesterday?
I did. Yeah. I did. I spent all the time outdoors. How about you?
Pretty good. I actually picked a case of 12 pints of strawberries and almost into May, and I still see a bunch of blooms out there, so we're going to have strawberries for a little bit longer.
So are your strawberries organic?
Oh yeah. They're all pretty sustainably grown. You know, I just kind of put a bunch of buffalo manure in the beds and grow them that way. I mean, I don't get the production most people do, but they're still good berries.
Do they like that buffalo manure?
Oh yeah, everything seems to. It's a pretty complete type fertilizer. Yeah, it's funny. Before I started using that, I had to do a lot of soil tests. Always had some kind of nutrient deficiency, and in the last 7 or 8 years since I've been kind of using the manure on the property, that we don't have that problem. But anyhow, it's as I say. You know, yesterday was Earth Day, and this is the Sustainable Living Show, which is kind of an earth-friendly program. And I don't know, I just I kind of thought I might try to say a little something about that. I'm not really excited about the events that are happening and kind of what our president's doing. And today we're going to be talking about clean air and clean air issues. And it really kind of bothers me. Like last week, there was news headline about Hillsborough County and our air quality issues here. And then also national news about air quality in other countries and these millions and millions of people that are dying so-called prematurely because of air pollution. And it's definitely a concern. I keep thinking about this book that I read about the shrinking of the earth and this idea that we're going to just keep exploiting things forever. And the reality is, you know, this perfect planet we live on, this blue planet. And in the book, he talks about the Voyager air spaceship that went up. They shot it up in space in the beginning of the 70s. And about 1990, they turned the thing around and they took a picture of the Earth. And, of course, by that time, it was like a billion miles away. And it's just like this little blue speck. And, you know, you think about that. Well, how insignificant we are as far as in the galaxies and, in our universe. But the reality, this blueness is because of the water on our planet. And there's no other planet like this. And it's just like we have this atmosphere with air in it, and you go out into space and there's no air. And, you know, we seem to take this for granted and think that we can just keep exploiting things. You know, like we're up and we're doing this thing with tar sands in Canada and doing kind of the same thing we did in the Appalachian Mountains with mountaintop removal. Now we're up there, you know, in the Yukon, this beautiful place, and we're pushing all this into the rivers and mining this stuff it's very costly. It takes like one part of energy to get a part and a quarter of energy back out of it. And it's just like it really kind of gives you a bad feeling. But the reality, I guess, you know, maybe I shouldn't talk about this anymore because we're probably get all depressed. But there is a couple of good things, and one of them is this radio station here, WMNF, and its mission and what it does, and it gives us kind of this ability to get the truth. And I really appreciate the asset being here in the Tampa Bay area. And if there's anything that makes me happy is to know that we have this station here in Tampa Bay and the great work that it does. The Hillsborough County's Clean Air Fair is coming up on May 3rd in Tampa, and it's organized by our local Environmental Protection Commission. And joining us is Jeff Sims, and he's a manager with EPC's Air Management Division. Welcome, Jeff.
Good morning. Very happy to be here today.
Great to have you. And also involved in the Clean Air Fair is the Suncoast chapter of the Sierra Club, and we have three local Sierra members. Phil Compton is their organizing representative, and Phil's involved with Sierra's Florida Clean Air Air Campaign. And also we have Paul Tobalt, and he's on their Conservation Committee, and Gonzalo Valdez, and he's with their Beyond Coal campaign. Thank you all three for being here and joining us.
Thanks for having us, John.
Thanks, John. I'm Paul Tebow with the Tampa Bay Sierra Club, not Seacoast.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Suncoast are the folks across the bay in Pinellas County.
Okay. Yeah. Well, you're from Sierra. I'm sorry.
We're the local guys.
You're the local. Okay. And these guys are from the other side of the bay.
Correct.
Okay. Well, great. So, let's maybe start about the Clean Air Fair that's going to happen, in May?
Yes, that's correct. It's on May 3rd in downtown Tampa. It's an event we're thrilled to host. We are the local environmental agency for Hillsborough County, established by the state 51 years ago.
Okay.
We're very happy. Last year we celebrated our golden anniversary, 50 years. And so we had a big to-do, new logo, rolled out a lot of publicity campaigns and so forth. Just to try to have people aware that we're out there. We're out there to answer questions related to air, waste, water, wetlands, anything environmental related. And the Clean Air Fair was an event developed 17 years ago by our former director with the Air Division. And it's an effort it's all about public outreach. And it's something we're very proud of. It's become our signature event, certainly. It's in downtown Tampa on Poe Plaza, which is a wonderful outdoor plaza between the Hilton and One City Center. And it's during the lunch hours. It's targeting the working professionals downtown. And we make it free to exhibit, free to attend, really make it as easy as we can for people to come out and exhibit and just learn more about the environment. We offer it out. Obviously, Sierra Club has been a consistent participant, for example, but it can be businesses that are showcasing their environmental efforts. It can be civic groups, just various elements. Last year, starting from a modest beginning, we had over 60 exhibitors last year.
Wow.
So it's grown into an event that's a challenge, yet it's fun, and it's something that we look forward to. We have live music, giveaways, drawings for various things. We also have a partnership we've developed with Florida Forestry. So there's free tree saplings that'll be available for anyone that's in attendance. So we really go out of our way to try and make it a worthwhile event and give the opportunity for businesses and for ourselves to just get the word out. And it's just meant to be a public interaction and engagement opportunity. So again, May 3rd, which is on a Thursday afternoon, downtown Tampa, we welcome anyone. You can go on our website, www.epchc.org, if you want more information. Certainly would welcome any and all persons.
Uh-huh. And do you have any more vendor opportunities, or are you...
We're getting close to capacity. The plaza is a wonderful plaza, and we've outgrown it almost. So, which is a great thing, but it makes it a challenge. And so, we probably could consider some more, but I couldn't guarantee anything because the latest numbers are showing us right at about the max number of tables. But we find a way to squeeze everybody in there, and we also have electric vehicles we showcase and so forth. So it's live animals from anything to kind of keep people interested and learn more about it. So, again, they can contact us if they have an interest.
Okay, Jeff, thank you. In 50 years, what was it, Nixon that started the environmental? Was it under the Nixon administration, Rob, that he...
Well, let's see, the Clean Air Act, Clean Water Act, I think both were passed under Nixon in the early 1970s, and then the first Earth Day was 1970. Gaylord Nelson was a senator, U.S. senator, I think from Wisconsin, who was the champion of that. You guys can correct me, because you're the environmentalist.
All true?
Okay. If we get it wrong, you can also email us here in the studio at dj@wmnf.org. I wasn't expecting that question.
No, I'm sorry, Rob. But I figured you'd know a lot more about it.
Well, Rob's been around a long time. We know that.
So, Phil, tell us a little bit about the Suncoast chapter.
Well, the Sierra Club is working here in Tampa Bay, the Tampa Bay group. I work with teams all over the state who are working to move their communities from burning fossil fuels to 100% clean energy commitment. Mm-hmm. And here in Tampa Bay, the Tampa Bay Group in Hillsborough County is working in particular to recognize the fact that we've got more work to do in Hillsborough County. Last Wednesday, the American Lung Association came out with its annual State of the Air report that grades every county in America on how many bad days they had for ozone, for smog, and how many bad days they had for particulate. We're doing okay on particulate here, but we got another F for the umpteenth year in a row for having too many days when, if you have asthma or COPD, you had a bad day. Mm-hmm. And we even had one day in that year period where anybody, everybody had a bad day. And the thing about ozone, about smog, is unlike particulate that you get when you have a forest fire, you can smell it, you can taste it, it's in your eyes, you see it, makes your throat burn. Ozone doesn't do any of that. It's odorless, it's tasteless. You don't really know you've got a problem until it's like you went to the beach and you get a sunburn. It's a sunburn on the inside of your lungs. Mm-hmm. And we had another day, ironically enough, the very same day, Wednesday, that this report came out, just to prove the point, we had a bad air day. We had an unhealthy air day all up the I-4 corridor from Pinellas County to Orlando, where it was a bad day for everybody. And the biggest source of that is not just TECO, but it's our tailpipes. So you can't point a finger at the utilities and say it's your fault, guys, without pointing three back at yourself, because we're all driving around. And here in Tampa Bay, you don't really have much of an option except to drive a car. And 98% of the cars are polluting pretty badly.
Mm-hmm. Well, Paul, maybe what's going on here in Tampa?
Well, we're focusing on, in the Conservation Committee of the Tampa Bay Sierra Club, we've just started to focus on pollution, air pollution, and to look at the issues of the distance from highways. There's new research going on that has previously said that 500 meters from the highway was an area you had to be concerned of. California's changed that to 1,000 meters, and they're getting downwind pollution at a mile or more. Mm-hmm. So our numbers have to change, and when you put those distances outside of 275, I-4, and the intersections, and MLK, and some of the other heavily traveled roads, you've got a lot of coverage inside of Tampa that puts people at risk.
What kind of pollution are we talking about within 500 feet or a mile of major highway?
Well, the one we're starting to get concerned about is the ultrafine particles, particulates. And they're finding that these are not being screened for testing because of the fineness of the product, and that the risk is relatively high in this area. So,
well, Phil mentioned that a moment ago. So what are these particulates? Is it the road being ground up by the tires?
Not necessarily. It's the material that comes out of the tailpipe.
Diesels. Because I was listening to the BBC the other day, and they were talking about the danger of the impact of cars and trucks on roads grinding the asphalt and the concrete into fine dust, and that dust has become a problem that scientists have noted. So we're not talking about that yet.
I'm not aware of that, but that the UK and the European Union is much ahead of us on some of the things they're looking at in both in chemicals and so forth.
So we're talking about the particulates behind that come out of the engines of trucks and cars pose a pollution problem somewhere between up to 500 feet or maybe even up to a mile away from any major road.
Correct. That's correct. And so the question we're looking at in the Tampa Bay Sierra Club and the Conservation Committee is doing this research now to find out where the testing sites are, how far they are off the highway to see what we're registering. Can we register what the ultrafine particulates are and see whether the contact with those? Now, you have to look at the fact that we're saying within that 500-meter area that we were talking about, it's not a good place for schools. It's not a good place for residences. It's not a good place for high-rise.
All right. So when I see orange groves, and if I'm driving up north, when I see cornfields right next or within 500 feet of the roadway, Is that a good place for a cornfield or for a citrus grove?
I can't tell you. I'm not a biologist, but I can tell you it's not a place for a house.
Not a place for humans.
Not a place for humans.
Not a place for a playground.
Schools. Not a place for schools. So there's we have a very significant risk population in Hillsborough with a 1,349,000 population. We almost all of that number can be taken out with people with risks, whether it's cardiac, whether it's asthma, whether it's COPD, whether it's age over 65, whether it's age under 18. All of those people are at risk, and it's almost the number we have for the population. So, you know, it's a significant issue for us. We have been fighting about TBX since TBX started, and now it's TB Next. Yeah. And it's TBX in disguise, and the issue of pollution off that highway and the new highway that's there is going to be significant. And I was told personally, I had a question on the TBX issue way back when, that there would be no increase in pollution. And that cannot be. No, and no face in the earth can that be. Now, they've changed it to TBX Next, but they're still the same.
And they still haven't unveiled their plan. The old plan was to expand the interstate system throughout Hillsborough and also touching on Pinellas County and Polk County and Pasco County, too.
Correct.
Yeah, I just want to make a quick comment. You know, recently I read a book on environmental toxin for kids, and they stated that diesel fumes are a known carcinogen.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
And it's just crazy to me to see all these people driving around in diesel pickups with nothing in the back, right, except for, you know, whatever, toys or... And, you know, we don't care about our kids. I don't know. It's just crazy. Well, let's go on to coal. Maybe we should talk about that, Gonzalo.
Yeah, sure. So we talked a little about fine particulate matter, and... You know, cars are one big source, but another big source is the big coal plant that we have in Apollo Beach. When people are actually amazed when I bring up the fact that in the state of Florida, we still have 10 coal plants here burning coal daily. In the Sunshine State, we get about 0.3% of our energy, one-third of 1% of our energy from solar. So in Hillsborough County specifically, going back to the fine particulate matter issue, 17 people a year have premature deaths due to high fine particulate matter. And a big source of that is this TECO power plant, which... From the winds, from the Gulf, that pollution spreads out 30 miles in every direction. So the population area is highly susceptible. About over 50% is senior citizens. So again, dealing with a lot of asthma, a lot of COPD. This is something that is a huge issue here in the area, and we spend $300 million importing this coal when we have all this free sunshine that we're not capitalizing on. And right now, clean energy is at a breakthrough. We actually just saw this last year. There was more clean energy installed and functioning than fossil fuel energy for the first time ever, actually. There was a quote from a UN scientist actually saying that the rest of the world is on board with this, and the only country that's behind this is the U.S. It's not keeping up with the rest of the world. So it's about time that as a Sunshine State, we lead the way in solar. We actually have, as a percentage of our energy share, we are the second worst state in the country. The only state that is worse than us is Delaware. So as a Sunshine State, you know, Texas, for as bad of a rep as they get a lot of times of being, you know, backwards, they actually are one of the leaders in energy, clean energy, and we can actually take a note from them in learning how to capitalize on all this great sunshine we have here in the state.
Would you expect to find higher rates of COPD and asthma in Apollo Beach and Riverview and Rusk and the areas right around the big TECO coal burning plant?
Absolutely. It's just a matter of fact. There is this fine particulate matter coming out, and that TECO plant is actually the 25th largest emitter of mercury of anything in the country. So we're having heavy metals going into the air. And I know we're talking about clean air here, but also we have to talk about clean water. The Sunshine State, we have a very precious aquifer that is very a big resource for the entire Southeast. We have coal ash ponds in the areas surrounding the TECO plant where basically the smoke that comes out of these stacks, they capture a lot of this in steam form, and they trap some of this matter in water, and they store it in coal ash ponds. Well, these coal ash ponds over the years, there's 10 of them, 8 of them have been found over the years to be missing liners or ripped liners. And groups like Environment Florida have done environmental studies to show this contamination is leaching into the groundwater. They've found mercury at high levels, arsenic at high levels, thallium at high levels, and this is all stuff that causes birth defects, increases form of cancer.
They found all this in the groundwater?
In the groundwater and surrounding areas, yes.
And, of course, that water also the mercury and such gets into fish at the bottom of the food chain. And so it goes up, it multiplies. So if you eat a grouper sandwich or a tuna sandwich, you're getting that, or alligator tail, you're getting that mercury at a highly concentrated level. And if you're a young woman who is in childbearing age and you might have a baby next year, you're going to pass some of that mercury on to your child, and it's going to cause irreversible neurological damage. The child's just not going to be who he or she could be because mom had a lot of grouper.
And just to make it abundantly clear here, you know, we don't have to look that long term to see the health impacts of burning coal. Last year, we actually had a pretty bad accident at the TECO power plant where five people actually lost their lives in a very unfortunate accident. This is something that you don't see happening at solar plants. You know, we have a saying at Sierra Club that, you know, a solar spill is just a sunny day. You know, we see that as being one of the biggest advantages to clean energy, is that it's safer. It's a true form of safe energy, that we're not putting people's lives at risk unnecessarily. Now, TECO is currently in the middle of a bit of a culture shift. They were just recently acquired by a group called Emera, which is a Canadian company. Emera, in their homeland, they have a very good record, actually, in terms of clean energy. So we're hoping to see that shift coming here in the Sunshine State. We are seeing that they recently committed to 10 solar fields here in the area. So we are seeing good progress on that. It's just happening a little too slowly. And we need to be ramping that up quickly to be keeping up with the rest of the country and with the rest of the world.
Yeah, maybe, Rob, we ought to give out the phone number.
All right. So if you've got a question about clean air and the problems that our guests have been discussing, you can call us up at 813-239-9663. If you've got a question, 813-239-9663. Or you can email your question into the studio here. Our address is dj@wmnf.org. You're listening to the Sustainable Living Program with John Butts, and John is here. And John, why don't you reintroduce your guests?
Okay, we got Jeff Sims, and you're with the Environmental Protection Commission here in Hillsborough County. And we got Phil Count, and he's with Sierra Club State.
That's right.
The state.
Ready for 100% clean energy for all campaign.
Cool. And then we have Paul Tobalt.
Right.
Tobalt. And you're with the Tampa Bay Sierra Club.
Correct.
Okay, great. And then Gonzalez.
Valdez.
And you're also with the...
I'm also with the Beyond Coal campaign with Sierra Club.
And go ahead.
Okay, John, just since we were talking about solar, and it seems like we have a minute here, I just was going to relay, I mean, I agree with you that we have been slower. The state of Florida has a lot of opportunity. We are the Sunshine State to be exploring solar. And it is something that you're starting to see more in the county. I mean, I'm certainly not the expert, but TECO rolled out their solar farm next to the plant last year. I know they just had their expansion approved. They're going to be expanding on that plant. And my understanding is that there's several around the county that they're going to be opening up. So that's certainly, you know, a plus. Now, there is the issue with the land that it takes up. Yeah. You know, there's always the you have to balance it, and then it's only supplying energy during the day. So you have to complement that with, you know, how you're going to cover power generation, you know, so moving forward. But it is certainly something that's recommended. And also, speaking about rooftop solar, that EPC was recently involved with the Florida Solar United Neighbors, and they developed this co-op to essentially work as a group to negotiate better rates for rooftop solar installation. So that's another avenue, you know, speaking where the resident, the local citizen, can get more involved and try to, you know, generate your own power. And it's you know, there's still a learning curve on this and how to, you know, engage it with the system, with TECO and so forth. But absolutely, we're in agreement that solar needs to be utilized more within the state.
This might all sound depressing and dreary, but there is good news. The same day, actually, that the Clean Air Fair is happening in Tampa, over in St. Petersburg, the Florida Solar United Neighbors is relaunching its solar co-op. They filled up quickly a year ago with hundreds of people, and they're opening it up again to everybody else who'd like to get a co-op deal for putting solar on their home, because it's filled up over here in Hillsborough County. This is a huge success all over the state, so people are getting their own solar power, cutting their power bills, making their homes energy efficient. And, you know, what Paul was saying about the roads, this is an environmental justice issue. If you look at the neighborhood right where the studio is, right here, these folks, within a half mile of 275, are breathing dirtier air than folks 2, 3, 4 miles off of the interstate. It's not an accident. It's how, you know, where the roads went, the interstates were put through our lowest income neighborhoods. What do we do? you know, we still have to all drive through here to go to work and all of that every day, right? But we can choose to get a car now that doesn't pollute. There are plenty of EVs out there that have no tailpipes. And the really good news is that Volkswagen is giving the state of Florida $166 million to use for clean transportation equipment and infrastructure. We're part of the Drive Electric Florida Coalition with TECO and Florida Power and Light and Duke Energy and GM and Nissan. And we're saying that $166 million shouldn't go to cleaner diesel trucks and buses like some people would advocate. It should go to zero emission buses. We've now got school buses that are electric. We've got transit buses. Pinellas County is going to start running their first two electric buses that they bought with their own money next few weeks. And also for EV charging stations, so you can go anywhere in an electric vehicle, pull off at any exit, rapidly charge, get another couple hundred miles in your car, and be on your way. So if fewer and fewer cars are polluting, and cars and trucks and buses are polluting as they drive by, then everybody's going to breathe easier, because this is not just an environmental issue. This is a public health issue, and people are suffering right now, and they don't even know why.
Well, let's take some phone calls from our listeners. We're talking about clean air, and our phone number, 813-239-9663. Let's go to John in St. Petersburg. Hi, John. You're on with our guests. What would you like to mention?
Yeah, Ron. I just got a short question about, as far as with solar energy, okay, the storage of it has to be done with like massive amounts of batteries, I take it?
Well, I guess there's a lot of approaches to solar. Do we have a solar expert in the room that wants to come forward?
I'll say this. There's multiple ways to store that energy. I've actually seen people talking about ways of storing that energy in water, actually, is one way. But the most common way is in batteries. We just saw a recent breakthrough. The head of Tesla, Elon Musk, was challenged on Twitter to develop a 100-megawatt battery within a month. He did it in a week. We're seeing right now the technology is at a breakthrough pace. It's kind of like, if you remember, the metaphor I like to use is plasma TVs. We saw them very quickly drop in price over about a 7-year period. We're at that phase right now where you can get solar panels at a discount, basically half of the price, 10 times the efficiency that they were just 3 years ago. We're right now at a breakthrough moment, a tipping point moment for clean energy. And if you want more information, I would say look into Florida Sun, the Solar United Neighbors. It's a great group, and they're doing great work here in the Sunshine State too.
My house is so shaded; they have to do something, or I might have to do some branch cutting. All right.
Well, just one more thing. You could look at CERC, the Clean Energy Research Center at USF Tampa. And there's a whole list of different research projects they're doing for storage.
And UCF has the Florida Solar Energy Center in Cocoa.
Thank you very much.
Yes.
Yeah. All right, John, thanks a lot. Thanks for your phone call.
You know, one thing that I think is kind of interesting is the new inverter technology out there that are tying electric vehicles into the grid, where you actually, they can rob your, you know, with paying you for it to take your energy out of your car during the night when they need it and when they don't need it.
Yeah, and when so many of us lost power during the Irma aftermath, mm-hmm. there were some people who were running their refrigerator on their EV sitting in their garage. Mm-hmm. And you can do
their car was running their refrigerator.
Yes, sir.
That's amazing.
Yes, it is.
813-239-9663. Our email address, dj@wmnf.org. I guess the other way to do it, too, is to make sure that your home is energy efficient and having the right insulation and make sure you can retrofit your attic, you can retrofit the walls in your home, and reduce your electric costs that way too.
One of the interesting things we found at the solar fair that we run with USF every spring is that the EV vehicles, the electric vehicles, many of those people have solar panels on the roof, recharge their batteries during the day and bring the car home at night, so they're completely off the grid with the car.
And also, it's important that everybody be able to make their home energy efficient. You know, people with low income have a higher power bill than people who have a higher income. It's really brutally unjust. And cities are doing some things about it. St. Petersburg has a program that Hillsborough County is about to start here. They're actually hiring staff. It's called the Solar and Energy Loan Fund. It's a low interest small loan, $5,000 or $10,000. People who can't take their credit card and go to Home Depot and buy the things they need to make their home more energy efficient. It is a loan that people have to pay back. But with the leadership of people like Darden Rice and Rick Kreisman and here Pat Kemp, we are getting those programs so that no one is left out, because the first thing you do is make your home energy efficient and then figure out, well, how much do I need in terms of solar panels to really cover my power bill after you cut it in half?
All right. So here's somebody that sends in a message by text. They say, my monthly electric bill is $52. I don't cool in the summer. Is solar still a good idea for me financially if my electric bill is only $52 a month?
You know, I
wouldn't take much. Yeah. You wouldn't have to buy many panels to cover that need.
Well,
yeah.
If we're still getting our energy from coal,
right.
I would say yes.
Right. But what you need compared to somebody whose power bill is now $300 is obviously about one-sixth mm-hmm. as many panels. Mm-hmm. So, you know.
Well, we don't just get our energy from coal, just to be clear. We also get a large percentage of our energy from frack gas.
You mean natural gas?
No. The thing is, people say the word natural gas, but in reality, two-thirds of gas production in this country comes from fracking. And fracking is the danger. This is the most important issue of our time right now for environmentalists. We are literally destroying the planet in a way that has never been seen before. And we don't know the consequences of this, but we do know that we are contaminating water supplies nationally. We are contaminating, just for example, the methane release associated with these fracked gas sites is 30 times more dangerous than carbon dioxide. And as a whole, actually fracking and fracked gas has a larger carbon footprint than coal does on the whole. So when people talk about natural gas or fracked gas as being a cleaner alternative to coal, we have to very quickly make them understand, well, yes, maybe at the power plant where you're burning the stuff, but not in the pipelines and not at the fracked well sites either.
And here in Hillsborough County, for instance, Hart is running clean American natural gas buses, it says so on the sign, because those do reduce our smog, our ozone, a little bit, somewhat better than diesel. But in Pinellas County, they're going with electric. They've rejected compressed natural fracked gas as a way, and they're switching to electric buses because you can't beat zero emissions that don't pollute at all. And those buses actually cost less to own and operate.
Just a thing for the Tampa Bay Sierra Club. On the issue of buses, we advocated during the big discussion on taxes that the Board of County Commissioners should go for the gas tax. $18 million a year to Hillsborough County out of that tax to buy electric buses. So we did a few electric buses, and if the county would go into its capital fund and fund Hart, and add another $18 million, it'd be $36 million. So we could buy a few electric buses out of that. But they won't put in the gas tax.
Let's go back to the phones. We're going to go to Miles in Sarasota. Miles, you're on. We're talking about clean air here in the Tampa Bay area. What's your question?
Oh, I just wanted to make a comment. I think they need more public transportation besides buses. But you can't build a subway in Florida because you're at sea level, first of all, okay? Second of all, I think Tallahassee, no matter if they tax something, they're obviously not even using the money the right way. They didn't use the lottery money for education, as far as I'm concerned. A lot of it they did not, okay? So I'm not sure what you'd really do, because solar is a great idea, I think, until there's a hurricane. You know, I don't know if that's any consolation at all, but it might be a problem, you know, with that. But I lived in California for about 5 years. And they're smart out there, you know. They really are, you know.
Well, I'm sorry, I don't mean to jump in, but so you mentioned hurricanes, and last year we had quite the hurricane season. And actually, it showed a lot of the problems that we have with a centralized grid. By having these energy producers and being all of us reliant on them, it showed that the grid is very weak that way. And what you're seeing now, the people that were the most resilient during the storms were the people that were not having to be reliant on that. They had their own power supplies. In Florida, you know, it's illegal to be off the grid, but in other places, especially in places like Puerto Rico, you saw the people that had solar energy were the only people that were able to survive down there without having their quality of life really damaged. And that's, you know, down there in Puerto Rico, they still get their energy from diesel. You know, it's just another example of how this centralized grid model that we've become so reliant on is really a dying model, and how with the new technologies coming out, we're going to see breakthroughs in a whole new way of collecting energy and using energy.
And when you have solar on your house, you can charge your car with it and never have to go pump gas.
I didn't know that. But that's the thing too, is that, you know, I think with Florida is that it's such, again, it's still so archaic. I call it the Louisiana legislature down here, you know. It's almost as bad as they were, because it's like, well, tourism comes first and everything else comes second. It drives me nuts.
Okay? All right. All right, Miles. Thanks a lot. Thanks for your comments.
Just one other thing. That the he talked about subways and the impossibility of having a subway. CSX wants to sell that rail line from Brooksville to St. Petersburg for $400 million. So there's an out with a public transportation facility that would take away some of the pollution that we have on the highways and be able to connect to two large areas of the county, of the region.
So, John, we've got another guest in here. Should we bring our other guest on?
Maybe Jeff, somebody else from EPC. Could you introduce your...
Yes. I'm going to introduce Lynn Watson. He is the manager of the air monitoring section for the air division, and we're happy to have him able to join us this morning.
Okay, so Lynn, can you cheer us up?
Well, yeah, I could say if we look back, first of all, thank you for having me here. But if we look back over the last 10, 15 years, we're monitoring air quality and we're looking at the criteria pollutants, you know, primarily ozone and PM. And over the last 10 years, we see a market increase or market, I'm sorry, decrease or improvement in air quality. And a lot of it goes to newer technologies. And
at the same time, cars are cleaner across the board for the most part. We've got more cars on the road.
We do, and despite that, the increase in vehicle miles of travel plus the increase in population, and we're still seeing a decrease in pollution. This is good news.
All right.
So
the regulation on cars to pollute less and to get better gas mileage, that's worked. That's improved air quality.
It certainly looks like that.
All right. Let's take some more phone calls. Bill is in Webster, way up in Webster. Hey, Bill, you're on. What's your question for our guests?
First of all, my name ain't Bill. It's Biff.
Oh, I'm sorry. Biff. All right. Biff in Webster, Florida. What would you like to ask our guests?
Well, I'm not really going to ask a question because I already know the answers to them. So I'm going to tell you something that you're probably not going to like or appreciate. But the energy that you are talking about is radiation. It is not natural energy. It is radiation. You cannot recycle or reuse or make new energy out of radiation. And the only way you can do is it's an unburned gas, and it has to burn again, and it will get hotter. That's the only thing you can do. With all this is fake knowledge you guys are spreading. They found this out in the 70s. I could go on, but I don't think you're going to want to be interested in what I say.
Well, Biff, frankly, we don't understand what you're saying. So when you say when you say it's radiation, what kind of energy are you referring to? Because we've talked about gasoline, we've talked about diesel, we've talked about solar. When you say it's radiation, what is radiation?
Radiation is what we make, and that's within the atmosphere. The sun's energy is organic. It makes things grow when it comes through. We don't understand sun energy. We guess at it.
Yeah, but what's the radiation that you're talking about?
Say what?
You mentioned radiation. What's the radiation that you're talking about?
The radiation is energy that we make in cars. We make it in everything that makes us move. That's radiation.
All right, so you don't like cars or anything like that?
No, not that I don't like cars. I worked on them all my life.
Biff, we're lost. Biff, you've lost all of us. We're all shaking our heads. We can't figure you out.
I bet you are shaking your heads. There's no doubt about it. But I was in the research back in the 70s with a catalytic converter. And we used to have arthritis that caused big rocks on your knuckles. And that was from the gases from the cars.
Right.
And it was from the battery that was underneath the front seat of the car or in the back seat of the Volkswagen. Those battery gases are worse than anything because that is where radiation comes from. A nuclear core is a battery. That's what it is. And they short it out and it blows. And it blows out uranium and all that everywhere, all over the planet.
All right. Well, Biff, thank you so much. Thanks for calling in.
Just to clarify, the newer technology for batteries is all lithium ion, and I'm not sure what the gentleman was talking about, but it's not relevant to the current discussions of solar and that technology.
Does it cause knots on your knuckles or?
Not. I have never seen anything like that. I'm Biff, if you have information, please send it our way.
Yeah, you can, Biff, you can email any documents you have to dj@wmnf.org. and we will look them over. Let's go to Rick in Clearwater. Hey, Rick, you're on with our guests. We're talking about clean air. What's your question?
Well, they're getting ready to build a new baseball stadium there in Ybor City. And I was wondering if they were intending to use that as a showplace for solar energy.
Well, we don't have anybody here who represents the Rays.
I mean, I think that would be a great idea. I know that other cities have successfully achieved community benefit agreements with large partner organizations like hospitals or sports franchise teams. That would take a large community organizing effort.
Not saying Rays should build it in Ybor City or anything like that, but the new Atlanta Falcons Stadium does have solar. It's a very it's a LEED certified facility, so you can do it that way. You absolutely can. They just did it in Atlanta.
Yeah, I think that would be an exciting initiative to work on. And, yeah, if you would like to reach out on that, please do.
Thank you.
All right, Rick, thanks a lot. Here's a question from Suzanne. She says, last year the Sierra Club of Tampa realized the way that animals are raised for food in factory farms destroys the environment more than all the transportation on the ground, in the air, and on the water, writes Suzanne. And she went on to say that they agree that going vegan will help heal the planet. And Suzanne says, at EcoFest yesterday, they were handing out cards telling people to vote in November for the usage of that money from Volkswagen. Otherwise, who knows where it will go and what it will go for. And Phil Compton, let me ask you, Volkswagen, because it lied to the public about auto gas mileage on diesel engines, it is paying states, you said a moment ago?
It's paying the states a total of about $3
billion. $3 billion,
wow. In the EPA's Environmental Mitigation Trust Agreement, that money can go for specific purposes, essentially for transportation technology infrastructure that will reduce nitrogen oxide emissions.
Has the money been divvied up? Has it been decided how the money will be spent?
Some states have. Oregon.
What about
decided,
Florida?
Florida is working on it.
So all right, so how can people in the public have impact on how Florida will spend that money?
We wrote a little blog telling you about it and linking to the survey. Here's the link, bit.ly/VW-EVS4FL. EVs, VW, EVs for Florida. That's the Sierra Club Florida News blog. It links to the survey and gives you the recommendations of the Drive Electric Florida Coalition, which includes the utilities and the environmentalists, the Southern Alliance for Clean Energy, who works a lot on EVs. You can take that survey now through May 11th. We want to make sure that the Department of Environmental Protection knows that the people of Florida want to reduce smog by substituting vehicles that we now have that don't pollute at all.
Let me weigh in on that also, because EPC is certainly very interested in this, and we're tracking it. We're trying to make sure it's publicized as much as possible locally, because we are Hillsborough County, but our focus is certainly to try and ensure that some of that money goes for projects for nitrogen oxide emissions reduction projects here in the county. And that could be at the port, it could be with HART, with going to electric buses or cleaner buses of some sort. There's various opportunities, even with the airport, but the survey is a great opportunity, because the DEP is currently very eager to get everyone's opinion, and it's something that you can weigh in on and offer your insight about how you think the money should be divvied up. One of the elements there is, do you think it should be earmarked for areas that have higher ozone than other parts of the state?
That would be Hillsborough County.
So we are one of the higher areas, so that would be one way to, if you're a citizen and you wanted to try to make an effort to hope that it would be more money would be directed this way, that would be something you might want to consider. Definitely I can't overstate that they have reached out and are very, very interested in what the public has to say. So the website that Phil mentioned, or you can always go to the Florida DEP homepage and then type in Volkswagen. They have a very nice summary of the whole Volkswagen, start to finish, and then how to get the link to the survey.
Just for perspective, State of Georgia decided, since they got a smoggy problem in Atlanta, that they would put all their money in Georgia into buying electric transit buses in Atlanta. In Oregon, they decided to put all their money into electric school buses. So we could do all those. We say, let's put it into electric buses and for transit and for schools, and let's have it 15%, $25 million can go for electric vehicle charging stations all up and down the interstate. Duke actually is putting $9 million of their money from a settlement agreement with Sierra Club into building charging stations. So we could really have a network of EV charging stations where anybody could drive an EV anywhere.
Jenna writes this, the Philadelphia Eagles have solar and wind power at their Lincoln Financial Field.
There you go.
All right, so
go Eagles.
Let's go to a Corey.
Hey, come on.
Let's go to Corey. Let's go to Corey in Tampa. Corey, what's your question for a guest?
Well, I got a comment and a couple clarifications. First of all, the disingenuous messaging about fracked gas is so insidious. I know several people who swear natural gas is not just natural, but renewable. And that's scary. And I wanted to point out the gentleman that was asking about storage for solar. In Florida, you do not need batteries. You do not need to store your power for solar to be a good investment. We are a net metering state, which in effect means your meter will spin backwards when you're making more power than your house is using. But for emergency power, you would need storage. But it's very cost-effective, and you don't need to buy batteries. There are also inverters out there that when the grid goes down, you can plug in something with up to 1,000 watts or some of a 1,500 watts demand, which is enough to run a fridge, a window rattler, AC, and lights. So we're there. We've been there for a while.
On net metering, most utilities offer that. Jacksonville just stopped it recently, and Lakeland doesn't. But basically, you get the wholesale rate. I work in a building in St. Petersburg.
No. The net metering you get, unless they've changed it.
They have changed it. They have.
Oh, okay.
Yes.
So the right wing has managed to
water
down the net metering laws.
Unfortunately, we tried to stop them.
Yeah, I'm very sorry to hear that.
Yeah. But, I work in an office building where we have solar panels, and it's a very efficient office building in St. Petersburg where the Sierra Club has its office, and we put a lot of excess solar into the Duke grid every day, and I also charge my car with it. So it works.
All right, Corey, thanks a lot.
Thank you.
Thanks. Rick writes this, I'm wondering where battery components are projected to come from, hopefully not just a different mining nightmare for the environment. So in the future, as we look at future battery technology, is this going to create a mining nightmare in some country?
I mean, that is a concern, especially right now China is the global leader in solar production. And as we know, China's business practices are not the best and not should be replicated globally. But that's why the U.S. needs to be taking a bigger foothold in this and kind of dictating the way we're going to be leading this fight. There is problems concerned with mining of some of the minerals and the things that go into production of these solar panels. But that's not a reason to stop, because if we're going to look at the total cost, from the environmental side, there is without a question that solar is a step in the right direction in minimizing our carbon production and minimizing the health risks associated with burning fossil fuels.
Some people express this concern about batteries in EVs. The way that works is if and when it ever gets to 80% capacity, then you should switch it out. I mean, you can still run it, but it's just only gets
what
four
happens
fistful.
To those batteries that you switch out?
Well, you
out?
Know what? You could store solar at your home with that battery, and it would work perfectly well. So those batteries aren't going to the dump. They're going to be reused for many, many decades to come.
Let's go to Bruce in St. Petersburg. Bruce, what's your question for our guests?
Well, a couple things. Bruce with the Poor People's Economic Human Rights Campaign. So for me, those who are in poverty, it concerns me. Two things. One, how are we going to make this affordable for working people? You talk about mm-hmm. Cuba, but most of them could not afford solar panels, number mm-hmm. one. Number two, what about indigenous people and respecting their rights? All too often, large environmental groups do these major compromises with big corporations or companies without considering what indigenous people want. And so I'm wondering about that. And
Bruce, can you give us an example of that?
It's happened all over the country.
Okay.
In this country and in Canada, where indigenous people's rights were sold out or they weren't even considered. And big environmental agencies or environmentally oriented agencies didn't consider it. We have groups now that are run by CEOs rather than environmentalists. And it concerns me. And it's a reality. If I have to go through and show the statistics, I look it up. Check out the Mohawk Nations up in Canada and how they were sold out by different large environmental agencies. I'm trying to be a little bit diplomatic and not name groups. One of the agencies, in their founder was a racist, did not like Native Americans. And that's how we ended up with national parks without considering indigenous rights. So,
all right. Well, Bruce, I don't mean to cut you off. We're almost at the end of the show, so we want to have...
We know you're talking about John Muir, Bruce.
Yeah.
And that was over 100 years ago.
I mean, the reality is, yeah, we're at a time right now where we need, for environmental justice to become a really strong issue, we need a wide coalition of people.
Yeah.
We're currently trying to bring in as many voices as possible into the coalition. So if you feel like there's something that's not being tackled right now or perspective is not being included, please reach out to us because we are trying the best we can to be inclusive. I know the main issue right now for indigenous rights is pipelines. Speaking back to the issue of fracking, I know Sierra Club was personally responsible in delaying the Sable Trail pipeline here in Florida, which is something that, you know, I would consider a victory for indigenous rights and for just the people of Florida in general. I don't want to discount your opinion or what you bring up. You have a lot of validity in what you're saying. The environmental movement has not always been the most inclusive movement. And when we are talking about things like solar, we have to make sure that we are talking about approaches that are not going to exclude communities that are not able to afford, you know, putting $20,000 worth of solar on their roof. There is solutions to that, like community solar projects. I know a lot of cities have started doing stuff like this, where they bring in groups. They do a large plot of solar for a certain area. Another solution is the Solar United Neighbors, which basically works as kind of like a collective bargaining unit where you get a ton of prospective buyers in line together to reduce costs. Again, these aren't perfect solutions, but you know, I encourage you to reach out so that we can try to work together to come up with, you know, real positive solutions that are truly inclusive.
And within Sierra Club, we've had an internal conversation about John Muir's legacy and his racism from 125 years ago and how that affected policy. And we've learned from that. We absolutely have.
Does the Sierra Club work with indigenous groups?
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Just another thing on the getting the power, renewable power to the... In Tampa, only 11% of the roofs in Tampa are suitable for rooftop solar. So you have to have an option. One of the options we have in hand is TECO with a mirror force on it to increase its renewable energy production and to get it up to 80, 90% by 2040, 2050. Therefore, what is on the grid will be renewable energy. Question becomes for us as Sierra Club is pricing.
So when you say 11% of the roofs, you're saying that structurally speaking, a lot of roofs wouldn't be able to hold the solar panels?
No, the trees.
Oh, the trees. I see.
But even with that, Tampa, Florida actually has the 7th most potential for solar of anywhere of any city in the country. So, even though we do have a limited array for solar, we do have a very, very large network to be able to produce a lot of energy through solar.
The best thing you can do right now to clean up the air in Tampa Bay is to take the DEP, Department of Environmental Protection, survey on how to use that $166 million. We're never going to see that much money again for a purpose like this. bit.ly/VW-EVS4FL. Please take the survey. Take you 5 minutes.
And also, please reach out and get involved with the local Sierra Club. Like I said, we are trying to build around these issues, and we would love to have as many voices included in that conversation as possible.
Jeff Sims from the EPC, in the minute or so that we have left, the Clean Air Fair is May 3rd. Where is it, and what time is it?
It's at Poe Plaza in downtown Tampa. It's right between Hilton and One City Center on Franklin Street. It'll be from 11:30 a.m. to 1:30 p.m. And like I said earlier, free to attend or exhibit. Just have to register prior if you're going to be an exhibitor. Come contact us through our website, www.epchc.org. And again, you know, like I said, we're happy to have members like the Sierra Club and various civic groups and so forth that are having environmental
WMNF?
Yeah, actually, WMNF.
John, you're going to be there, right?
Yeah. All
right.
And I want to thank EPC staff for the fine job they do in alerting us when we do have a hazardous air day, an unhealthy air day, to let everybody know as quickly as they can not to go take a walk that afternoon, that evening, before the sun goes down, because they know they're on top of it and they protect our health.
And Phil, if people didn't get a chance to write down that website, can they email a staff person at the Sierra Club and get information on the clean coal? I mean, I'm sorry. It's not clean coal. It is.
It's not clean diesel either.
We're going to have to find
Phil.Compton at sierraclub.org.
Sure. Okay. Phil.Compton at sierraclub.org.
Thank you.
All right. And it's Gonzalo.Valdez, Valdez with an S, at sierraclub.org.
Okay, Gonzalo. And you're Beyond Coal is the name of your campaign.
Yes.
Sorry about that.
No, it's fine.
All right.
Thank you all for coming by, and we're down to the last minute or so. Anybody else want to say anything before we go?
Well, thank you for having us, honestly. That's
I just want to say thank you, and again, you know, our really, even with the clean airfare and everything else, is we just want the public to know that our agency is there for you. We've been there for 50 plus years. If you have environmental questions, you know, we are happy to answer them, and that's why we were established, is for Hillsborough County to have a local organization that can, you know, answer your questions and investigate complaints, find problems. You know, that's what we do, and we're happy to do it, just like we monitor the air monitoring data and the water quality data. That's something that we've been doing and have a very robust system in place with a bunch of historical data. So, again, we welcome you, epchc.org.
All right. Well, thank you all for coming by. John, thank you. We'll see you in 2 weeks.
Should be here.
And see you at the Clean Air Fair on May 3rd, right next to the Hilton in downtown Tampa. This is 88.5 FM WMNF Tampa, St. Petersburg.